I don't know what those white people in this country feel. I can only include what they feel from the state of their institution. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
Welcome back to another episode of Black History for White People, a podcast where we educate, resource, and challenge white people about black history. I'm Brad, and on today's show are my co-hosts Katina and Garen. Today's topic is policing and protests. You're listening to part two of our episode, so if you're brand new and just tuning in, make sure to go back and listen to part one first. We'll begin this episode with the story of Darius Tarver, a Denton College student who was tragically killed by Denton PD. We then meet up with Anthony Gott, journalist and Denton protest organizer, and Kevin Tarver, Darius Tarver's father and founder of the DJT Justice Network, to discuss what's happening behind the scenes in regards to the protests. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Darius Tarver was a 23-year-old UNT student. He was on the dean's list and majoring in criminal justice, and he was killed in January. He had a car accident, a collision, where he injured his head a week before his encounter with the police. And the day of, he was acting strange, and his roommates called the police and said that Darius wasn't violent or threatening, but that his behavior was increasingly bizarre. When the police arrived at the apartment complex, they could hear Darius talking quietly about God and light, and he was breaking outdoor lights with a pan. He was also holding a cooking knife, at least initially. And when he encountered the police, he called out, "I'm not afraid. There's only one God, and he will be my shield." The police convinced Darius to come downstairs after a little while. They yelled commands at him, and after he didn't comply, one of the officers shot him with a taser. Another officer fired at Tarver and shot him with his gun, and Tarver fell. While Tarver was down, one of the officers kicked the knife away so that Tarver was unarmed, but he still had the frying pan, and he got back up and started moving toward the officer. And then one of the officers shot him again with a taser, and another officer, the one who shot him previously with the gun, fired two more shots and killed him. And the thing that gets me about this story is considering it from Tarver's perspective. Here's this bright college student. He's on the dean's list at UNT. His dad is a chaplain for the McKinney Police. He's well-loved and respected by his friends, his roommates, his community. He's headed into a career in criminal justice. And then he has this car accident where he has a head injury a week before this incident. And then this night, his brain is clearly not healed from the accident. And it's just so sad to think of Tarver that night, clearly confused, not himself, talking about God and light and saying that he's not afraid. And it just strikes me that he needed compassion. He needed someone to tell him, "Darius, it's going to be okay. You're confused right now, but we're going to keep you safe until you get better." I wonder what he understood and felt and feared in those final moments, and it just feels like we failed him, and it's tragic.
Okay, so we are here on the Denton Square interviewing Anthony Gott. He is a senior in journalism at UNT, a new resident of Denton, has been here since attending UNT and moved here last year. Anthony has been such an integral part of the Denton protest. His cultural identity, like his ethnic background, he's Mexican and African American, and he has been fully invested in the Denton protest. He's a Denton protest organizer. He's been a great voice and a great leader, but he's been really invested in the story of Darius Tarver, who was a UNT student who was killed by the Denton PD. Anthony has covered his story, written about his story, researched Darius' story, watched the video several times, and just really devoted himself to justice for Darius and keeping his name alive as we navigate protesting in Denton. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, Katina. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. That big intro. Talking about DJ Darius Tarver has been something I didn't expect to take over as much of my time and resources, but I'm very thankful that if anybody was gonna do it, I'm glad it was me over at UNT, because I remember at first it was kind of just something that was tragic. It was just like, oh no, like this, like what a tragic situation, because you just read the press release, you just see, you know, kid with a knife, shot by police,
yeah,
having some sort of mental breakdown. You're like, oh dang, that's like, you know, you see it, it's like, okay, that makes sense, it was justified, the police were like attacked,
right?
And then you hear what Kevin Tarver has to say at a press conference, and then you see what happens on the body camera footage, and then at some point, you know,
right,
something's got to give.
Exactly. Well, and I met you and just having my own passions, you know, for the Denton protest, and being like, we kind of met as organizers, and we've, you know, just kind of had the same heart, like-minded. We've been a part of the organizers meetings. You and I have worked together, kind of help bring the organizers together. And so when I think of the protest, the Denton protest, I just think about you. And hearing you the first time talk about Darius, and me not really, I mean, I was like, I saw the story and my heart was broken. But I had assumed, and I'd asked questions to Chief Dixon, and I assumed that it was something that had to happen and that there were no other options. But my heart was just broken for him. And I got to meet his dad, who is going to be coming and joining us to talk about his son, Reverend Kevin Tarver. But I first heard from a protest perspective, like from people who were opposing what happened to Darius. My first time really hearing someone just really advocate and oppose was you. And I was so grateful. I remember thinking, like, there was something that just didn't sit right in my heart about the story. But I realized that sometimes these situations and these decisions have to be made. But I am so grateful that you have done the research to kind of challenge what happened.
And that's the thing, too. I was in the same spot.
Yeah.
While I was covering the story initially, and even when I talked to Kevin Tarver and he first brought up the body camera footage, I was still kind of like on the fence. I was like I believe him, I do.
Yeah.
But I saw the police report. It has to be, they must have done everything they could.
Yeah.
And then while at the press conference, whenever Chief Dixon was stopping and starting and stopping and starting, I was sitting there and I was like,
so you were at the press conference.
I was at the press conference. I was there covering it for the news.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was there, I was leaving that, and I was like, they did everything they could. They took time. They gave distance. They sat there. They were trying to be compliant with them, but he attacked them.
Yeah.
But then I go back to the station. I've already done the report. I did the whole 6 o'clock news. I get done. It's 8:30. I ask for the flash drive just so I can look at the police camera footage. I don't leave there till 9:30 because I'm sitting there and I'm bringing people in. I'm like, guys, this took less than 5 minutes.
Wow.
From the time that they see Darius Tarver walking down the steps, when they see him visually, not just hear him calling down, 5 minutes is all it took. But if you're at that press conference, you think it took an hour. They were there talking with him for an hour,
yeah,
trying to talk him down, all this stuff. But I think whenever Kevin comes in, you guys will get an even bigger perspective.
Yeah.
He knows about all the true rules of, like, giving distance, not repeating a bunch of commands. Everything that was supposed to go, everything that they could have done wrong, they did.
Yeah.
Everything that they could have done wrong. And it just didn't sit right with me, the fact that it was so blown over simply because of the coverage that came out. Because of that press conference, so many people, especially in Denton, had been in the same spot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, they did what they could.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. It's just another tragedy. But they really did all that they could. But that wasn't it. I couldn't sit there and be like, that can't be where the story ends. Especially after talking to Kevin, I was one of the first ones to interview him when he first came public.
Yeah.
It all came about through Deb Armenter, councilwoman.
Yeah.
And after talking with him there and talking with him since, and we've been having. We've been in touch every now and then. I'm hoping him get together some stuff for his son's music video right now, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It's impossible for me to sit there and look at him and know that the pain that he's gone through and know also, like, the attacks that have come onto him due to the
yeah.
all the press that has come out.
Yeah.
There needed to be someone who was stepping forward who could amplify it to more people. And that's what I feel like. I feel like I'm just a big amplifier for the other people that are already doing great work. There's already people here doing great work.
There are. I love that. And the thing about it is that, you know, we talk a lot about at the protests. I always say, you know, that Black people get to be imperfect. We don't have to be perfect. We don't have to have a spotless reputation mm-hmm. to have our lives to matter and to be bestowed dignity and equal treatment. But so often, African Americans, Black and brown people, we get the doubt instead of the benefit, and there's an over criminalization of us based on like our bodies, like the skin that we sit in, and
it's a threat,
right? And so many times, like in the stories of like George Floyd, people it's like they put the victims and the dead on trial. They put them on trial and they crucify their characters instead of focusing on the person who committed the act. And so in the case of George Floyd, there's so many attacks on his character and who he was, and he didn't have to be a perfect human being to not have been killed, especially in the way that he was killed, and he was unarmed. But in the story of Darius Tarver, he was the Black model citizen and still killed.
Mm-hmm.
He was in law enforcement in some kind of way, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a criminal justice major and he planned to go into criminal justice and he had plans of reform. He wanted to be a leader in change. And he
was a part of an organization. There was a police organization or law enforcement organization that he was a part of as well, and he was kind of following the footsteps of his dad, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't remember the name of the organization either.
Yeah.
But I do know that he was in he was a major in criminal justice, and what most people I don't know how common knowledge this is, but like he had a car accident that was very severe the week prior to him getting shot, and that I feel like that always gets forgotten, but brain injuries cause like our world shattering. Like you see it all the time. Cause I'm an MMA fighter. I see so many fighters and boxers and even football players that have so much CTE. Their whole personality shift and change. They're whole different people.
Yeah.
Cause it's so traumatic. Our brains shape up who we are. And he was in a state of distress after this big car accident. It was like the perfect storm for this kid to get killed.
Well, and the healthcare system definitely failed him first.
Mm-hmm.
So many times with healthcare, and I've worked in healthcare myself for 21 years. So many times there's a battle between, you know, politics, insurance, and physicians. And a lot of times physicians and healthcare systems, they're jaded because and they're trying to, even though the good physicians, the good caretakers, you know, they're coming against a system that will only allow a patient to stay in the hospital for a certain set of days. You know, they classify, it's like people will sit in a room and they classify injury, they classify diagnosis and how much time they think is, you know, that diagnosis should get. So insurance stops paying and that type of thing. And so doctors now, many doctors will make decisions based on those restrictions instead of caring for the patient. And so in my opinion, the healthcare system failed him first because there's no way that the injury that he had, that he should have been released that soon and not had and not had like consistent follow-up care.
Absolutely.
And, you know, his roommates say that I tell me about the 911 call. Have you heard the 911 call?
Yeah. So at the press conference, at the press release, they played the 911 call. And the thing is, too, what you don't get is in one of the body camera angles, it's the woman officer who goes to the car. She's actually on the phone again with the roommate, who is way more calmed down, and he's actually starting to like be like, yeah, like DJ has never really acted like this before.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you hear pop, pop.
Oh.
By the time you get to the, the roommates were scared. And like, I haven't been able to get in touch with them. I don't think very many people have since, because I'm sure there's so much guilt because they didn't want their roommate to die.
They were
scared.
Contained.
And by the time that they were calm enough to really explain the situation, he wasn't even given a chance. I think that's what it's all about. We're not even given a chance because we're seen so much as a threat before we ever even considered someone in danger or someone in need of help. How many times do you hear about somebody calling for a distress call similar to this?
Exactly.
Or, hey, even people that call the cops on themselves of like, hey, like, I don't feel safe in my own home right now. I think something's going on outside. And they're the ones that get thrown on cuffs. Like,
exactly.
there's so much of a threat with a weapon, without a weapon. We've seen white men who are 6'4", 250, jacked.
Yeah.
With guns, with knives, they get apprehended. We see school shooters kill 20, 30 people, all white, and they all seem to walk away fine. They even get Burger King on the way to jail,
exactly.
You know?
And we see, these guys that come on the square with assault weapons during our protests or just on any given Sunday, and they're walking or they're accosting Willie Hudspeth, and they have assault weapons, and the cops are there just standing on the corner, and nothing happens. Like, everybody gets to live to see another day. And that's the part that is so freaking mind-boggling for me. It's like, how do you decide? There has to be, it speaks of the system. There has to be a reason why white people who commit, like, I've seen where white people spit on police, cuss them out, I'm gonna have your job, do you know who my dad is, kicking. I know my husband taught at a middle school in Denton, and one of the kids reached for the officer's gun, and he lived. And I don't understand how someone like Darius Tarver could die. And it's almost like you have to give yourself permission to feel something outside of the box, because we've been so conditioned to think, if you just follow the rules, if you just do this thing, if you just do that thing, then you won't be harmed. But when we see people like Philando Castile, who is cooperating with the officer and is saying, yeah, officer, you know, thinking that he's safe, and in the next minute he's dead, and he gets killed in front of a baby and her mother. I mean, there's something definitely wrong with the system. There's something definitely wrong. And the thing that really struck me, because I finally watched the video, and I normally don't watch these videos because I feel like there's a normalization of assault on black and brown bodies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
There's this normalization. And so I finally watched the video because Mr. Tarver posted the video himself. And so I feel like they gave me permission to watch it. And so I watched it, and the thing that really struck me, and I heard Mr. Tarver say this, in his last moments, Darius was crying out and calling out for his Heavenly Father. He continued to say, Heavenly Father, and his dad says that he came to Christ, which, with his father being a minister, a pastor, and a chaplain to the McKinney PD himself, that was significant for the family. Like, he gave his life to the Lord just like maybe a couple of weeks, I think, before he was killed.
It was super, super recent.
And so to see, I'd heard that, but then when I saw him just calling out for his Heavenly Father and then they killed him, it just...
And he had his hands down. Like,
yes.
He hadn't moved. He hadn't made a step forward. And like, even in the press conference, he goes, "Look, it looked like he had PCP. His eyes were darting back and forth. He was acting like somebody on drugs. He was calling out to God. He never made a step. He never took a step forward. His hands were at his side. There was time. they could have taken him home. He didn't have to go away.
When he was down for a certain period of time.
Without
anything happening. After they tased him the first time, he was down. And there, in my opinion, there was time to contain him. And that didn't happen.
And that's where I think where we go back to the use of force and policing, especially here in Denton. They just went forward with the ad hoc committee that you were a part of.
Yes.
Reviewing use of force. And it almost feels like because Chief Dixon's on there and what the mayor's already said back in January when this happened, saying that that was an okay use of force, that that was a justified use of force.
Yeah.
It gets really scary now when we're having these conversations, because I watched back the last meeting and
yes.
People calling in are just being like, don't defund the police. People don't even know what we're even
right.
talking about at this point.
Right.
And it almost feels like it worked exactly to how Mayor Watts wanted it. Like, give
yeah.
them something and then it'll go away. Because I've been waiting and listening. When are we gonna really get down to the nitty gritty? And it looks like hopefully in these next couple. I know you're skipping next week, right? Isn't that what it said in the last meeting?
I think we're gonna end up meeting this week.
And
listen,
okay.
you say how you be free to say how you feel, because I'm gonna say how I feel.
Okay.
Be completely free.
Let's do this. Let's take a shift, because I think we'll dive into the story when Kevin gets here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I think we're. You know, both really interested in hearing more. But let's talk about what you kind of just explained. Like, a lot of people are just, they hear defund the police and they think, I mean, quite honestly, a lot of white people think they want to get rid of the police. Like, let's just not have any police at all.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, we don't have to get too much into that specifically, but I want to hear, like, this ad hoc committee, the stuff that you guys are seeing, what's going on behind the scenes, behind the fog of media and headlines and all these huge, like, yeah, just behind big headlines, what's going on behind the scenes specifically, and what are some, like, specific things that you guys are asking for that seems to be maybe getting done or maybe is getting
yeah.
pushback that honestly to most people would seem like, why is that not happening? I think
yeah.
that would be really helpful.
And a lot of the thing, like, because first things first, like, when you hear defund the police, like, defund is not a scary word. I think that's the first thing that we got to tell people and show people, is that defunding just means, hey, we're gonna pull a little bit from your budget this year, like we'll work around it, stuff like that. Usually, like when you go to a school, education will get defunded and schools will just have to work with less. They'll have to have the same, they'll have to work around and try to get the same resources and all the same things for those kids, just with less.
And funds are reallocated. Surplus funds is what, it's not a deficit. It's like where surplus funds are reallocated to help the police to serve
exactly.
the public by bringing on people and specialists that can kind of assist the police officers in their, like, so mental health. And there are mental health police officers, which is something I learned, you know, from the ad hoc committee. There's a gentleman who's on the committee who, I can't remember his name, but he is really awesome in kind of explaining the different specialties within the police. And there's domestic violence, there's child abuse, there's cultural issues that are, you know, sensitive, and people have implicit biases, and helping people to understand. There's translation barriers. There's
oh, yeah.
cultural, like, the way people, there's nuance in how people, everybody doesn't act the same. We're not a homogenous society. Different people talk and act and do things differently that are within those cultures, that are within, like, a societal norm. And so go ahead, I'm gonna let you.
And yeah, and it's all about community support. Like, they have those systems, but clearly, like, what they have isn't working. So this is really all about community support. How can we pull some of the funds that maybe aren't being used where we're trying to take the funds and put them where they could be best used.
Yeah.
So if it's mental health, let's take them to the people that have been only focusing on mental health for the past 30, 50, you know, 60 years. Let's take this money and put it to the places that are already doing some of these community services, like working with domestic violence
mm-hmm.
and family issues, working with rape victims and sexual assault victims, working with those people. Because, I mean, here in Denton, like, I'm also working on this story kind of independently. UNT, for the past 5 years, since 2015, hasn't had a single a sexual assault charge be reversed. So they've had countless that are just no signs of sexual assault, no signs of sexual assault. For the past 5 years, out of over 200 campus sexual assaults, not a single one has been overturned. Like, when you think of things like that, when it's that prominent still here in this college town, mm-hmm. there needs to be a whole group of people. Because I know there's far more cases that haven't been reported simply just because of the police. I have a friend who has gotten assaulted, and I will not say her name, but she refused to come forward simply because she didn't want to have to go through the police because she knows nothing. She didn't feel confident in what the current system has to help prove her right, because it's almost working against her, because she didn't do like the immediate steps or whatever because she was traumatized. So it's whenever you take whenever you don't feel confident in the current systems that we have to make new ones or invest in other opportunities. And that's all what defunding the police is. Hey, Kevin.
Hey.
Good to see you, brother.
And thank you so much for coming. You have just been such a tremendous inspiration to me. And giving me like a local, like there's another story, Lamont Stowers Jones, and there's Darius Tarver. And it takes this national conversation about race and discrimination, and it brings it home. Like, because so many small towns will say, oh, that we're not, and I heard that in the ad hoc committee meetings, you know, we're not New York, we're not these big cities, but we're Denton, and there are several stories of discrimination. There are several stories of where police officers could do better towards black and brown people. But I want to hear from you. We want to hear from you, and we are so grateful for you being here in your gear, with your mask, with your shirt, representing for your son and fighting for justice.
I'm representing him every day.
Yes, you are.
And that's something I have to do. Not that I chose to do.
Yeah.
But even on yesterday, that was the anniversary of his death.
Yes.
You know, and like people say, you know, I was actually on a call or Zoom with a lot of the parents of those that's been killed across the country yesterday. And everybody was just dealing. And then one of them, which is local also, which is not black, which is Troy Brooks.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he's fire chief in Fort Worth, and his daughter was murdered. But because of qualified immunity, I mean, there's nothing to be done. So,
yeah, the people who don't know, what's qualified immunity? Because they need to hear this.
Well, one of the things, qualified immunity, the big part of that is if there's no way to show that they intended to do it. So if you get up out of your bed and say, I'm not going to go kill this person today, mm-hmm. and then I go put on my badge and I shoot somebody, well, criminal or civil, I don't have any responsibility. So I'm protected because of this. And when you take that back and you look back, if you look at all the old pictures through the time when segregation was really strong, mm-hmm. and you see that even the sheriffs and the Texas Rangers were sitting here watching hang and black people and watching all these crimes being committed, mm-hmm. well, that means that I can commit them without having any responsibility. So basically that same thing is happening today. Maybe you're taking off the sheets, but you put on a uniform. Mm. You know, maybe it's not as transparent, but it's still happening. So the thing is, with what's going on today, it's sad, and people say, well, why don't you people just get over it? You know, it's not the same. We didn't do that, and we didn't do this. But as you see continuously, we have young people. If you look and you look at the deal, ranging from 18 to 37, we're losing people every day.
It's still being perpetuated.
Yeah. And the problem is there's no responsibility, there's no accountability.
Yeah.
And that's what the problem is. That's why it has to be changed. That's why reform, you know, has to happen.
So my question is, because I feel like it's really, because so many times when these things happen and people see them in the media, they will just see it in the media and say, well, if they were wearing this, or if they were doing this, or if they were doing that, they don't get to see these human stories. They don't get to see that these people are people and that they're human. They will judge a mother's tears and a father's tears. They will judge parents' motives for how they went for them weeping. I saw that with Trayvon Martin. Like, she is a college-educated Delta Sigma Theta, you know, one of the African-American sororities. She worked in the prison system. She just ran for office and lost by 300 and something votes. She was a human being. And there are human stories. So who were you before this happened? Who are you, Pastor Kevin Tarver? Who is Darius? Tell us who y'all are.
First of all, you know, I was the baby of seven kids. I come from a very religious, a Christian background. My father was a pastor, still a pastor to this day. And he's about to be 88 years old this year. And my sister was an evangelist, prophetic. My mom was very anointed lady. You know, my family has always been brought up. We were brought up and raised in McKinney, which was pretty much a racist town at that point. And, you know, and my whole thing was, you know, even when I went to school and got away, I went to school for criminal justice, just like Darius. So Darius was doing what I was doing.
What school did you go to?
I went to Tyler Junior College, which that was the first school he went to as well.
Wow.
And then I went to Sam Houston State, which is known for criminal justice.
So he was literally following in your footsteps.
Pretty much.
And the example that you set forth and wanting to work for law enforcement.
Yeah, he wanted to make a change in law enforcement. He didn't want to just stay a policeman, but he wanted to be in a position to where he could make a difference and help change what he saw going on. This was a kid that, you know, growing up, they tried to put him in resources, but they found out when we moved him to schools and better schools, took him to Frisco, then they found out that, hey, this kid shouldn't be in resources. His problem is he should be in gifted and talented.
Exactly.
Because he was too smart. He was just bored. So even when he went to school, he's never been a kid that we had to make do his homework, make do anything. He handled his business. Same thing he was doing in college. He was handling his business. He's working two jobs, going to school full time. He was a person that anybody could come talk to, you know, and not, you know, be biased, you know, unbiased against anybody. But at the same time, he was brought up in a family, well respected, still respected to this day.
Yeah.
He was respected.
Yeah.
You know. Yes, I'm a pastor, I'm a minister, I'm a chaplain. I'm also part of the City of McKinney Chief of Police Advisory Council, which we do review and do the things.
Yeah.
I'm also certified for Texas Advisory Board for TCOL.
What is TCOL? Tell them.
What Texas TCOL? Commission on Law Enforcement.
Yes.
So when I came in and I seen all this stuff, I know this stuff. So that's why I have a problem with Chief Dixon. That's why I have a problem with what the officers did. You know, and I have a problem when media first put it out there, they could only put out what they had put into their face, because media shared what Chief
press release.
Had put out there. And it was all fabricated, it was all lies. But that's the first thing that sticks to people's eyes and mind is what they hear from the beginning.
And they resent it out like two or three times.
They did. So tell them, because I remember we were standing in front of the police station with our initial protest, and this is where I met you, and Chief Dixon was there, you were there, and you, like, just the respect that I have for you and how you, I would say, conducted yourself, for lack of a better word, because you don't owe anybody proper conduct at all. But the way that you yielded to allow Chief Dixon to speak, and how, like, your son is dead and you just still observing this protocol and being this man of God. And every time that you get on the microphone, you are preaching the gospel and declaring the word of truth. Like, people are calling us communists. They're calling us, you know, Marxists. They're calling us all these things. And we're bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ to every protest, and we're crying out for justice in the name of Jesus. You took that microphone and you said something that really struck me. You said, I asked them to be honest with me because I understand that things could happen. And I told them that if they would just tell me the truth, then we could figure this out. Those were almost your exact words. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, and the problem was to this day, I'm gonna be honest, to this day, if it had not been for family members that lived here, DJ's first cousin,
yeah,
we wouldn't even knew DJ was dead.
Oh.
The police never contacted us. The hospital never contacted us. He was killed at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was notified maybe around 11 o'clock, and that was because a family member called me crying. And then when I get here, my son's body is already in Fort Worth. Because they didn't know who he was, but they called his name to come down the stairs. You know, so when I get there, you know, they kind of shun off, you know, the Texas Rangers there, and he's, you know, kind of moving around, but then I pull out my ID and show him who I am.
So let me pause you real quick. So right now, as we're on the square, there's a Blue Lives rally going on. Police Lives Matter. There are many people here on the square, and I had no idea when we first scheduled this that this was happening, but I still declare it. I declare this in the name of Jesus. Like, this ground that we stand on, even though the statue is gone, the spirit, the demonic spirit of white supremacy and racism still exists. And that is the same spirit that drives a lot of people's Police Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter. I have a very healthy respect, and so do you, as a man of God who works within law enforcement, whose son desired to work in law enforcement. We have a healthy respect for police officers. We have a healthy respect, but these people driving around the square, they're acting this way because that monument went down. Make no mistake, their heart is driven, not because they care about police, because if they cared about police, they would care about police officers and their mental health. They would care about the funding that is necessary for police to do their job fully. They're using police officers for optics. They do not care. My husband worked in law enforcement he's worked in law enforcement for 16 plus years. He went to Arkansas State University for criminology. He deserved the same thing that Darius did. And so as these horns were beeping, I wanted to just say that because I want you to be able to speak without this foolishness going on, because it is not driven by a love and a care for police officers. It is driven by white supremacy and racism and a desire to snuff out Black Lives Matter.
Yep. Like, if they really cared, like, there's so many officers that have been fired, been transferred for trying to speak up about injustices, but
yes.
You never hear a damn
Nobody
thing about
Nobody cares.
It.
Yep.
As we deal with a corrupt Denton County Sheriff's Department,
yes, ma'am,
that has done horrible things. Tracy Murphy has done deplorable things. No one is speaking up for the officers that are impacted by his decision making. So people do not care about blue lives. They do not care about police officers. And I just think that it is on the Lord's name. Like, we stand on this ground and we're declaring every time we come together on this square, we're
wherever
declaring
we stand,
every
it's holy
time,
ground.
Every time.
God said, wherever we plant our feet, that's holy ground. That's where he stands. And the thing is with that, if saying Black Lives Matter bothers you and All Lives Matter doesn't, or Blue Lives Matter doesn't, then it's just the word black that bothers you.
Exactly.
Because that's a problem. Because when they see you standing up, and that's what I've done, and I said I will continue to do it, not only for my son, because it's bigger than DJ, it's bigger than me.
Yeah.
And the thing is when we first came to the crime scene, the Texas Ranger told me one story. They called the chief back.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he told me a totally different story. These two law enforcement officials, same crime scene, but two different stories. So I had a problem with that even from the beginning. And that's why I had stated, if you be transparent,
yeah,
because I can understand my son had an accident the week before.
Yes.
He could have acted out of character.
Yeah.
But being a part of law enforcement, I give them the benefit of the doubt. But being the father of my son,
you know him.
I know who he was.
Yeah.
And this is something that he would never do because he had the utmost respect. He was already being recruited by law enforcement.
Yes.
You know, he was already ready to graduate. I mean, he had things lined up. So when I talked to the chief, he looks me dead in the eyes And I'm giving the officer sympathy because he's telling me that my son has stabbed an officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if the officer is okay when my son is dead.
Wow.
And then he tells me it's this fabricated story that he tells the media. But then he lies and tells me that he has not seen the film. But then he comes at later and tells me that he's just questioned the officers and not watched the film. But then why is it that he could have a different story when the Texas Ranger is questioning him and he has a different story?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there was no transparency from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody watches any of the pre-media before I finally got the tape released,
mm-hmm.
he even admits that the suspect or the subject may have been dealing with a mental crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says that all the officers are trained to deal with mental crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that my son came down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
He actually advanced on the officers.
Mm-hmm.
They tased him.
Mm-hmm.
He went down. They tased him again.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got up. And then that's when the officer had to shoot 3 rounds, striking him once.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the media gets.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lie that the media gets.
Mm-hmm.
And all the time, he know that it's not what happened. So that's why I have no respect for Chief mm-hmm. Dixon, because he lied to me to my face, he lied mm-hmm. to the media, he lied to the public, and he still tried to lie even after he was forced to release the video.
And when I was at that press conference, when he was explaining it, like, what really bugged me out and really made, whenever I went back and I was done that day and it made me go back and watch it, is because he said that he looked like he was on PCP. You can't just be saying stuff like that in the middle of a news, because like now all people hear is kid shot, PC, he was on drugs.
Yeah.
Duh, he was on drugs.
Yeah.
But they don't question to think what at all, because he'd already said it and set that precedent. And I had people coming up to me after those first round of protests, like, why are you protesting for a kid who was on drugs and try to stab police officers?
Right.
Yeah. Then I had to sit there for 30 minutes and basically have a whole conversation like this, and there's only so many people you can get to.
That's what I'm saying. If you go back and watch any of those videos, that was never any precedent. But then he lied and took two 911 calls that he wanted the narrow way. And then he also took an extra frying pan. If you look at the videos, you'll see that's not the frying pan that DJ had.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He took this bent frying pan to try to show that, hey, he had maybe had super strength. But if you look at the video of the crime screen, you can see that pan that my son had, it wasn't bent up or anything. So he did all this to sway the public to believe their narrative. But then also, if you listen to that same video when he released the tape, he said one of his officers' uniform was sliced, not a person stabbed. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you actually watch the video all the way through, you'll see that the officer said, oh, feel like somebody hit me in my shoulder. He was never stabbed.
Right.
Have you ever seen any press release when an officer has been injured, shot, stabbed, that they won't release who that officer is?
Right.
This officer has yet to be released, but he's supposed to went there to the hospital stabbed. And then not only that, this is the shooting officer whose name still has not been released.
And you know the protocols, because again, criminology, law enforcement.
If that name is signed on top of that report, that's public knowledge.
Yeah.
Everything has been sealed, you know. And then, I don't know if y'all know, but even the Texas Ranger, after I started looking and finding the information on him, find out that he's been sued by and held up by the Fifth Circuit Court. Not only that, but several cases have been pretty much tainted. But then before I went to Washington, D.C., then I found out that he was forced into retirement.
And that's what we're talking about.
When
officers are trying to kind of possibly...
So
he was trying to do... Was he trying to do the right...
I'm going to tell you, the press conference that Chief Dixon had was a botched report of his report.
Mm.
So he was using the information that Ranger Bowens had written in his report to try to portray my son as a criminal.
So let's talk about, and thank you for sharing this and giving us the insight, because it's all the things that, like you said, the media is not going to share. Let's talk about the national attention that your case is finally getting, which is so awesome, because so many cases don't It was really awesome when they did the event on TV and Alicia Keys was singing and she was standing near in Darius's name and that his name was written. It was really a powerful moment to see that.
That was a God moment.
That was. And just watching you and your organization, I want you to tell us a little bit more about that and how you have been to the White House and you have partnered with Lee Merritt, who has kind of taken on the case and it's getting the national attention that it deserves and you have committed yourself to justice. Like, tell us, talk to us about that, all of that.
Well, one of the things is that there's a lot of protests going on. There's a lot of activity going on, but there's not a lot of voices.
Yeah.
You know, you used to have Martin Luther King, you had Malcolm X, you had, you know, John, just died.
Yeah.
You know, you had
Vivian.
You had all these voices behind or in front of a movement, but right now there's no movement. But one of the things that I tell people, I didn't choose this.
It chose you.
It chose me. And God chose me. Believe me, as a man of God, I was angry. As a father, I was just horrid, you know. And I cried out to God, and I was angry with God. I'm asking him, why? My son, why this? And he know what he said. He said, the week before, I could have took his life, but I spared it. But he said, over 2,000 years ago, I know another father that had to sacrifice his son. So even after I talked to my son that Friday, that was the last time we talked, the last thing we said was that we love each other. And then he went to a church that he never had went to before. Went to two churches prior to that, and he didn't feel it. Then they went to a third church, and he told his mom that they had to go in there because he just felt. And they couldn't find seats. They went up into the balcony, and the preacher was preaching, you got to have your own testimony. And something about that message just drew him down. Because I had told him that Friday, I said, God had great plans for you. You got to give it all to God. Wow. Not knowing that Sunday, he totally went and surrendered and committed his life totally to Christ. That Sunday, he already knew who he was, but he had not completely surrendered. But that Sunday, he surrendered.
That last leap of faith,
And that Monday, he was back at school. And 3 o'clock that morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, they murdered him.
Yeah.
That was an attack of the enemy.
Oh, yes.
On a child of God.
Yes.
That's why they will not get away with it. And I declare and I decree that they will not get away with this. It will uncover other cases. It's going to uncover the things that they've been doing.
Yeah.
And they will be held accountable regardless of what we have to do. And the ministry is much bigger, and that's what DJT Justice Network is.
Yes.
It's much bigger than just that. And this is some of the stuff. Most people, they just see the post, but it's official.
Yes.
That's a lot of other things that's going on behind the scenes.
Yes.
And when the site and everything is completed, we're going to be a new national grassroots organization.
I love it.
And the thing is, guess what? North Texas Coordinating Framework, pursuing change at the intersection of policy and people.
Amen.
And the face of that, DJT Justice Network, will be Darius Tarver.
Thanks for listening to part two of this episode. If you haven't listened to part one, make sure you stop right now and go back and listen to part one in your feed. If you're looking for more information on what we discussed, take a look at the show notes or go to blackhistoryforwhitepeople.com. If you'd like to play a supportive role in the podcast and be able to vote for future topics and listen to full interviews, check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/blackhistoryforwhitepeople. On our next episode, we will be discussing the Green Book. We'll leave you with this quote from Martin Luther King Jr. "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy."